There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad you're here on this Thursday. Live local talk over the hour. Text lines open for you as well at 343-0106. We'll take your text there. And big thank you to my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. for joining us. And at this hour, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we're being joined by Bob Clem, and writer, director, performer, and the newest documentary that you can check out on APT, and he's going to tell us how to do that, is about the blues. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, the blues. But the blues in Alabama, in the Black Belt. I mean, when I saw a trailer for this, and it was talking about places that some of us know about, but like Bola G and Panola and Aliceville and Eutaw, Alabama, I saw those names come up. I said, the blues scene there? I was fascinated just at the jump. So it's a real treat to get the director of that film that we can watch coming up next month on APT. Bob Clem joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Glad to be here, Sean. Great. I have a lot of friends in Mobile, so I'm really happy to be on the show.
Well, it's good to have you on, and I want to get into the library of films that you have made. Go back before we even get into this most recent film and talk about, your history. You know, I mean, it's Alabama. We got to talk about where were you born, where'd you go to school?
Well, no, I'm from North Alabama. My father was a preacher, so we did move around a few times. I was born in Birmingham and went to the college there, Birmingham Southern.
Okay.
And then I headed north, oddly enough, to go to law school, but I decided that after not too many years, I really wanted to go to film school. So I went on and went to NYU to film school, and I've been in that area ever since. But, you know, even at NYU, I was unsure what I wanted to make movies about, and I think I was trying to imitate some other directors for a while, you know. But eventually it came to me, I think in Oxford, Mississippi, I was walking along, and there was a book about Big Jim Folsom. And I said, Big Jim Folsom, wait a minute. That's a really fascinating character from when I was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
I remember people talking about him, but... and then I realized that really what I needed to do was explore, you know, my own history, my own background, and stop all these other things. I mean, that's what I knew best, and that's what I know about best. And so I've continued making films about the South, and specifically Alabama, ever since that time.
Hey, telling so many stories, and we'll get into those. I do want to start off with this most recent. As a fan of the blues and a guy that spent more than a night or two in the Black Belt of Alabama, when those two things came together for an idea for a film, I saw that. I said, oh, my gosh, I'm ignorant. I'm ignorant to the blues in the Black Belt.
Well, the Black Belt really, you know, it extends, of course, all the way across the South. And a lot of the blues, a lot of the original blues musicians originated in the Delta of Mississippi. But that area of black soil and that density of plantations and density of slave culture in that whole region, that's kind of what gave rise to the blues, because that dense black culture, and the blues was their way of dealing with bondage. I mean, that was their entertainment, and also the way they carried forward the story. I think one of the people in the film says that the blues really is a history of black people come from slavery. That's what it is. It's kind of a part of folklore. And as a matter of fact, Kern Jackson at the University of South Alabama, we came down and interviewed him. He just really put a lot of things together, because he's the head of African American Studies at University of South Alabama, and he is a folklorist. He really knows the subject well. And so he was really articulate in the way he kind of drew things together, because the way I make films these days is I don't use a narrator that tells you, just kind of explains everything for you. I try to let the people on screen who are a part of the film, who are interviewed or musicians, let them tell you the story and not have my interfere with my own, you know, words of wisdom.
But, I mean, anyway. But part of that is you do have a hand in it because you decide who talks and you decide who talks first, second, third, come back to. I mean, that's the magic.
Say I'm an impartial umpire or something. Yes, I mean, yes, every editing is a decisive process where, yes, you're trying to structure a story, but I think you do it by having them talk one to the other. There's kind of a line of continuity that continues through their conversation, and I don't have to insert my own narration to sort of explain to the audience what's going on. But so it makes, I think, and some people feel like it's a more challenging form of film to watch because, you know, you have to figure it out as you go along rather than have somebody explain it all for you, you know, sort of thing. But yeah, you know, editing is definitely, that's where you make the film. You make the decisions about who's going to get to talk and what the story, how it's going to be structured and so forth. That's true.
Bob, I love the fact that as a proud Alabamian and music fan, you know, I go beyond just thinking about Hank or Fame Studios, and I add this other leg to the stool here of, hey, Mississippi, it ain't all y'all when it comes to blues.
That's true. Well, yeah, that's true. There were a lot of Alabama juke joints, for instance, and there still are some, but a lot of them were just pop up occasionally. It's a pop up juke joint kind of culture now because there's not quite enough to sustain juke joints full time. But the one in Birmingham, there's one in Birmingham, the Red Wolf Lounge, which is quite the place. I mean, I had a great time there. Everybody was so welcoming. I mean, I was just coming in with my camera, and everybody was fine about my filming. And so, yeah, we got a lot of great footage in the film from all of these venues that do exist in Alabama, in the Black Belt, and in Birmingham. I'm sure there's some down in Mobile, too, somewhere. But I think the whole idea is there's always been this blues culture. I think it's less in favor now because a lot of the black people in particular have moved over to other types of music, and there's less interest among them in the blues. But now it's a lot of white people, you know, since the rock and roll, English rock and roll invasion, I mean, they were, of course, based a lot of their music on the blues. And so, what's one thing I did with all the musicians, blues musicians, I would ask them, why do you think white people like the blues so much? And it was interesting to hear all their answers to that question, but I can't go into that now. But I mean, that's part of the film is I had a conversation with the musicians about their lives and about the culture of the Black Belt and growing up in Alabama and in Jim Crow or whatever. And it was really an interesting, a great conversation that way. And so that's a very important part of the film to me, as much as the music, really. But I do love the music. There's no question about that. There's some really good musicians who are part of the Alabama scene.
Yeah, Bob, I mean, what you're saying, I think, and I don't know your journey or others to the blues, but as a fan of the blues, mine definitely came through rock and roll. I mean, as a rock and roll fan and growing up, knew about the blues. People had talked about it, but it was because of Led Zeppelin that I found Robert Johnson. You know, it was because of Led Zeppelin. I found Muddy Waters.
Yeah, right. Sure. No, I agree with that. And I think that some of the Alabamians took part in that whole going to Chicago, and Chicago is kind of the melting pot for all this stuff. And, you know, as you say, these guys from the Mississippi Delta went up there, and they had electric guitars instead of acoustic guitars they used to play with. And the whole thing evolved, you know, into Chicago blues, and then, as you say, on to Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin. But some Alabamians did that too. There were some. They didn't become as famous, but I have sort of included their stories in the film, and what it was like to be in Chicago at that time. Blues was everywhere, you know, and and also just the whole black immigration and black communities that moved to Chicago. There was one part where all the Alabamians settled, and another part where the Mississippians, because it was all related to who you knew, you know, in your family that was already up there, kind of thing. But anyway, that's.
So who, Bob, who should we, talking to us right now, when we get a Wi-Fi connection and we want to update our iPods, and it's some Alabama blues names, what like, give us a couple that should be in our repertoire?
Well, I mean, you know, you can go back to Big Mama Thornton. She's not from the original Hound Dog, you know, but I think she's from North Alabama, but Well, the black belt, I would say Willie King, for me, is really, he was an amazing man. He was back in the 90s, in the early 2000s, and he died before his time. And there's a movie about him, and it's really good. It's a 48-minute movie that was made by these Dutch filmmakers. Down in the Woods, I think it's called. And Willie King had this film, this festival called the Freedom Creek Festival, which attracted people from all over, from Europe and everywhere. It was really kind of the backwoods blues kind of tradition, which I think is Alabama. Is kind of, that's what you have to say it is. It's rural blues. It's kind of traditional blues, backwoods blues. Some of these places that you have to go see music, I mean, they're hard to find. They're so far back in the woods.
It's my kind of place. if we hear it, you know, I think about, and I feel embarrassed as an Alabama guy, because so much of what I'm saying is off that other state over there to the west. Mm-hmm. But the difference in, like, they'll say Delta blues or Hill Country blues, right? And they'll say, oh, you can hear the difference between the two. Alabama blues sounds like Hill Country blues, or sounds like Delta blues, or something completely different?
You know, it's really hard to say. I mean, I think... I'm not sure that I'm enough of an authority on blues. I mean, this is the kind of thing I do as a filmmaker. I mean, when I start the film, I know very little about the subject or something. And then by the time I finish it, I know more, but I'm still not an authority by any means. But I think that, you know, Alabama blues probably is more, it's more rural blues. I think sort of like, I would say the Hill Country blues would be closer to, because I think the Delta blues was kind of influenced by the fact that it was so much commerce going through there, the Mississippi River and all those influences like that, whereas Alabama is way in the interior, you know, so it has to be more of a rarefied, traditional form of blues, and I think that's what it is. So, you know, and rather than try to come up with a specific Alabama sound or something, I was just more interested in doing Alabama because it's the state I'm from.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that their music is so different from Alabama, but on the other hand, these musicians are pretty damn good. They're just not as famous. So, and I think that also my intent was just to show the culture and have the people that go to these places, the people that are interested in it, and how the musicians got into it. So it was all about the stories of these people. And I think that's what makes the movie interesting to most people. They like the music, but they also appreciate these people's lives.
All right. When we come back, more with Bob Clem, we'll talk about where you can check out this movie and many more of his. We return next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 122 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Bob Clem, filmmaker, a writer, and an Alabamian. And by the way, Bob, I'm looking at text coming in here. This one says, it's a shame the Harlem Duke Club in Pritchard burned down. All the great artists that played there, the list is amazing, would have made a great museum. I mean, I hear things like that, and my heart's sad that I didn't get to experience that.
Well, that's true. That's true. There was a heyday for this music that was a few years ago. But you know, you're right. You're right. And so, well, anyway, where do you want to go from here? I mean, I think the Pritchard Club, and there are a lot of them in Birmingham, a lot of places. And we saw them on the roads. These places that used to be full time blues clubs.
So what happened? Why were they? I mean, do you figure that out in the film, that while these clubs were in demand, whatever decades ago, now you're saying they're just kind of a temporary pop-up thing, right? Because the demand's not high enough?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. It's hard to say. I really don't know the answer to that question. I do think that there is some... there's a thing called the Alabama Blues Project, which is trying to keep young people interested in the blues. But, you know, it's like any other musical tradition. I mean, jazz, I guess, to the same extent. I mean, you know, the people, or even opera, I mean, the audience for it seems to shrink over time, because younger generations don't necessarily, they go to something else. Now, I think there is still a lot of interest in the blues, because a lot of people are into vintage music or roots music. That's certainly a lot of that. But, I don't know why it's not happening in the Black Belt as it might have at one time. But the one club I was telling you about in Birmingham, the Red Wolf, I mean, that's a blast. That place is great. And you'll see that in the film. It's a lot of fun. And the other pop-up joints, you know, it could be that they will it could become popular again. But somebody has to do the promoting, and somebody mm-hmm. has to put this kind of thing together. Maybe that's what's lacking, you know. Maybe nobody has enough money to go to these places. I don't know. Hard to say.
Let's talk about when people can catch the film. And the full title of the film is what?
The film, the title is Alabama Black Belt Blues. We call it ABBB for short. It's sort of a mouthful. But anyway, Alabama Black Belt Blues. It's going to be on, I'm trying to look for it. I think I'm Alabama Public Television again in December. And I can tell you in a few minutes. It's also available on the Alabama Public Television website. It's available for streaming on that site at any time. And so,
okay, so people can go see that. Yeah. They get home tonight and they can go see that.
They can go on the Alabama Public Television website and they can find the area where it says, you have to look around a little bit. I have this specific link around somewhere.
I'm going to share the link here as we finish the interview, so I'll get it to it.
Okay. Yeah.
They can go check it out there right now, or like you said, it's coming on regular broadcast again in December. Let's.
I'll give you the dates in a few minutes as we keep talking.
Okay.
Because
I'm gonna call it audible here and talk about this next project. You and I were talking this morning about this the blues documentary, but then you must have been reading my mind, things I was interested in. You said, by the way, you're doing your next film on what? On whom?
Me.
Yes. That admiral, that statue that just got removed here in Mobile?
Oh, yes. Well, the next project, I've actually had this project underway for a couple of years now. I thought that the story of Raphael Sims and the Alabama, first of all, it's a fascinating exploit that he was able to, he escaped. He was always being sought after on the oceans as he went around, destroying Union ships, or he would burn them. He would take all the passengers off the ship and the crew, and then he would take off whatever was valuable for his crew, and then they would burn the ship at sea, and they'd have these big bonfires. And so he was, of course, dubbed a pirate in the North, and in the South he was a hero. And as a filmmaker, it's not my decision or choice to make him either one of those. What I want to do is tell his story and also the very interesting story about another Mobilian named Henry Hotz. He was actually from Switzerland, but he had moved to Mobile. And he was sent by the Confederacy over to Great Britain to try to try to bring them over to the southern side. And you see, the Sim story is a part of that whole thing because the ship Alabama was built by Britain secretly and under subterfuge. And did they really allow it anyway because they favored the South? That was the whole question. That's why I thought that, I know that the people are, they don't want any Southern hero, general, or admiral, in his case, to be put on a pedestal. And I agree with that because of what they were essentially fighting for. But in my case, it's like any other drama. It's like, King Richard III was a terrible monarch, but they did make a good play out of him. So I think that Sims, whether you look at him as a good character or a bad character, he's an interesting character. And so that's what my film is going to try to bring across.
Yeah, and I would argue for the city of Mobile, that is, not just Admiral Sims, not just a name for the Confederacy, but specifically with literal and figurative roots in Mobile.
Well, that's true, even though he was born in Maryland. Right.
I mean,
he was born in Maryland. He married an abolitionist. His wife was an mm-hmm. abolitionist from Ohio and all that. They moved to Mobile because he was stationed in Pensacola, and I guess he decided that Mobile was a nicer place to live, and I guess kind of a long commute. But anyway, and they got to like Mobile, so they stayed, and he became a Mobilian that way. And, of course, the Alabama itself never actually was anywhere close to the southern Confederate shore, not to say Mobile Harbor, but and yet the story is essentially about Mobile in that sense of
Bob. Let's do this. I'm up against a hard break here. If you can hold on for a couple minutes to come back and
talk more.
No, that's me. And we got some Willie King to take us to the news break. Shake It. This is going to be in the tight rotation here on Midday Mobile 129. We'll be right back.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And continue our conversation with Bob Clem, a film writer, director, producer, and I'm forcing him to be promoter in this case as well of his films. Right now. And I put the link up on my Twitter feed, y'all. You can go to at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter, and you'll get the direct link there to the where you go on APT to be able to check out the Alabama Blues documentary, Black Belt Blues documentary. But we're talking about Admiral Sims, too, and this is a, I mean, you've done all these films on Alabama. Is this the first time you've talked about Sims?
Oh, definitely. No. It's the first time I've talked about Sims. It's the first film I've really done that has anything to do with the Civil War, either. First of all, it's a difficult film to make because you don't have any film footage of that period.
Right.
So you have to be very creative. I mean, that's why, probably one of the reasons nobody's ever made a film about this story, because it's a pretty exciting story in terms of what happens in the film. The final battle with the Kearsarge, you know, off Cherbourg, France, and everything. You know what I mean, everybody's watching from the shores, and, and you know, and all this stuff. It's a pretty good story. But as a documentary, or certainly as a feature too, it's a very, very difficult film to make. On the one hand, having the money to recreate anything, and second of all, there's no film footage. So that's a challenge I'm trying to meet.
Yeah, and I can imagine as you're trying to paint this picture, and you did a little bit there, but you know, people think about the Civil War and they'll think Eastern theater or Western theater, this battle, that battle, but you have Admiral Sims fighting internationally the Civil War.
Well, that's right. I think it was his idea to do the commerce raiding idea, you know, to go out and find Union merchant ships, which of course were unarmed or lightly armed, and he could easily, because he had 12 guns or whatever on his ship, he could overwhelm these ships. If they were Union registry, he would take the crew and the passengers off, and he would burn the ship, and then he would move on. I think he did burned about 65 ships totally. And, $15 million they got from Britain after the war because he had done that. But the thing is, there were no fatalities. That's one thing about Sims, as opposed to the generals who were fighting the land war. Nobody got killed in most naval engagements, or very few people did. And it was true in Sims' case as well. And the people he was hurting the most was Wall Street and the merchants who owned these ships. They were all losing money, and they had to sell their ships to British concerns. And the entire The entire American merchant marine was decimated, and according to John Sledge, he says that it didn't recover until the 1920s. It was, in some words, Sims' campaign, and that of other Confederate raiders, there were several others, you know, really did some serious damage long-term to the Union merchant fleet.
Yeah, and I wonder about that kind of Robin Hood effect, for lack of a better term. You and I were talking during the news break, and growing up, you know, the statue of Admiral Sims was, omnipresent. He was to some degree, just a symbol of Mobile. And while if there would have been other Confederate generals there, it would have struck me differently, but I guess I always thought, well, it's a Mobilian, this and that. But he did have, even though fought for the Confederacy, but he was different than a field general. And like you said, he was taking, he's almost like a dashing rogue pirate, more than a...
Well, that's what he was called in the North, of course. Called him a pirate, because it's true that his crew, they weren't really Confederate sailors on his boat. He got... his crew was mostly British, Irish, Portuguese. I mean, people... The usual scruff that when you get off the docks, you know, where he would be. I mean, the crew of the Alabama was really an eclectic bunch of people. And I doubt that there were more than... Only the officers were Confederates, were Southerners. So this gives you some idea of the thing. So it wasn't the tidiest ship in the world, according to observers. So it almost had the look of a pirate ship. You see what I mean? I mean, in addition to that, and of course, Sims had this long mustache that he waxed out to these ends. I mean, it was inches long, you know, and it was just way over the top, kind of a Salvador Dali look. So that in itself also enhanced his image as a pirate, of course. And people were really scared of him. I mean, they saw a sail over the seas. They would really like run for cover quickly, or they would just be terrified because they'd heard these stories about Sims. But the thing is, he didn't really ever kill anybody or hurt anybody. I mean, I think he acted like a gentleman, a southern gentleman.
So what was his legacy, Bob?
So, yes, he had a different kind of character than the southern generals and the people that there was slaughter going on in the trenches and throwing people against barricades. And, you know, it was horrifying. And this is one of the things about the story. As I was getting back to the whole thing about the British part in this story, they were really watching this war go on over in America, and you know, the Europeans were just horrified that there was so much carnage going on in America during this Civil War, and they wanted to come in and intervene somehow, but of course they never did. But
I think they were licking their chops, looking at what was going on, and the British trying to align themselves with the South until the Emancipation Proclamation made that tough for them to do politically back in England. Yeah. But, I mean, the English, yeah. I mean, they had tried in 1812. They figured this might be their next chance to try again.
Well, you know, that's a typical point of view, I think, on the American side. I do have a wonderful British scholar named Amanda Foreman, who wrote a book called A World on Fire. She's a terrific historian. And she kind of comes in with the British view, which is very interesting to hear all her explanations of this and that and the other thing, probably countering the argument you just made. But, you know, I can't really go too deeply into that.
We'll watch the film when it comes out. All right, let's talk about this. The film catalog is voluminous here, and if you're an Alabamian, y'all, Bob has films you need to see. Is there one place that's like a best clearinghouse for your films that have been put up, or if we want to, you know, go through and binge watch, do you have somewhere we could go?
Well, if you have Amazon Prime, there are several on there, the Big Jim Folsom and In the Wake of the Assassins. I mean, I think that on my website, well, let's see, I think I'm going to have to get my Vimeo site to the point where films are watchable there. Right now, yeah, I think you have to pay $1. I wouldn't want to have people have to do that, so I'm going to change it. But anyway, yeah, I would say Vimeo, if you look up my name, Robert Klim, you can find everything that I've made on that site. Vimeo.com.
Mm-hmm. That's where I found it. Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, that's all there. And then, as I said, have five or six films that are on Amazon Prime in the documentaries. Just type it in, and you'll find it.
Well, I tell you what, I'm about 18 minutes into the Big Jim Folsom film, and I'm absolutely fascinated. You mentioned In the Wake of Assassins just quickly here. That's the Phoenix, part of the Phoenix City story, but a bigger story of Alabama government.
Well, yeah, I did. You know, I met John Patterson, and he agreed to for me to make the film. This took years to do, by the way, because he thought I wasn't interpreting the story right originally. And anyway, so eventually I got the permission to do it. Yeah, In the Wake of the Assassins, and he didn't know. He said, "Are you going to make this about the Phoenix City part? Or are you going to tell my whole life story?" And I said, "I bet I'd like to tell the whole life story." But he was a little nervous about that because, you know, he knew that he wasn't going to censor what I was going to put in this film. And he was worried I was going to be really hard on him. Because after Phoenix City, of course, John Patterson became Attorney General and Governor and used the race issue to maintain power. And now he says that he was doing that because he still had never gotten justice for his father's assassination. Well, that's what he says. But, you know, anyway, it's an interesting take on the story, but anyway, so the film In the Wake of the Assassins basically tells how the crime was tolerated in Phoenix City. It resulted in an assassination. It launched the career of John Patterson, who then went on to become governor as an ardent segregationist. And he's the one who supposedly forced George Wallace to go in that direction as well. You probably know that story. Mm-hmm. So, no, I think the Phoenix City story has more implications than just the whole thing about it being a cesspool of sin and everything. It goes on to the entire political history of that period. So that's what I try to do in The Wake of the Assassins. And the Big Jim Folsom film, you know, it's an interesting story, too, because it's very, very timely. I mean, it's about populism. And Folsom's case, it was, you know, populism. He was trying to draw together poor whites at that time, many of whom could not vote because of the poll tax and things like that. and for blacks. That was a typical populist move from the 19th century, and he was trying to do that again.
Yeah, he was bringing
people.
He
continued that even into the 50s when the race issue suddenly blew up, and so he became kind of a martyr, you might say. Although he also was a heavy drinker, and that was one of his problems too, of course. But he was a colorful figure, so it makes it for a good film. It's got serious politics in it, and also it's amusing in some ways.
Bob, he wasn't drinking; they slipped him a Mickey. Remember?
Well, I know. That's true. And it says that in the film. We have some people in the film. He famously went on TV the night before his final election with George Wallace, and he appeared to be drunk on TV, in live TV. It was all over Alabama. People watched him staggering around, and, you know, mispronouncing his wife's name or whatever. So, and later he said they slipped me a Mickey. And some of the people actually think that the Wallace, members of the Wallace campaign had done that. But, you know, anyway, it kind of makes the story more of a detective story. But, I think people have thought that shouldn't be a part of the story. But on the other hand, I think it just goes with the territory. This was Folsom. It was all about intrigue and background.
Talking about Big Jim Folsom. There's so many stories. Listen, and we're gonna do that. I'm going to have to get you to agree to come back on the show sometime pretty soon.
Absolutely.
Y'all, there he is, Bob Clem. Check out the newest documentary, newest film, Alabama Black Belt Blues, over at APT. I put the link up. Bob, we'll talk again soon. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Sean.
All right.
Take care.
You too. Coming right back for Midday Mobile. Stay right there.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, glad to have you along. Man. Fascinating discussion, and we just really hit the tip of the iceberg with the films put out by Bob Clem. Hopefully you check it out. Alabamian filmmaker making great films about our state and the history of our state. Hey, this segment of the show brought to you by Harry's. Harry's just came out with their sharpest blades ever, and unlike some other razor companies, they're not charging you more for their product improvements. Their blades still just $2 each. And I figured out how this makes it even more valuable, because already it's a deal. I've told you I've been shaving with Harry's for years. I love the convenience of having the blades show up. I love the great shave, and I love the value of replacement blades at $2 each. Go compare that to what you're seeing at the grocery store or the pharmacy for replacement blades for other razors. All right. But now that they're sharper, you're getting even more shaves out of those $2 replacement blades, so the value even higher. And you can do this right now. If you've heard me talk about this over the years, say, what is Sullivan talking about? Okay, this is the time for you to check it out. You can find Harry's new sharper blades in the big box drug and grocery stores near you. You'll see them there on the grooming aisle. But if you want to shop online, and let me add, support this show and get a smoking deal, here's how you do it. Great offer for y'all. New customers can get a Harry's trial set for just $3 when you use my code SEANS over at harrys.com. SEANS. So my first name and then an S, Sean S, at harrys.com. All you do, go to harrys.com. You'll see the little place that says put in the code, put in Sean S. You will get the kit with the 5-blade razor, the weighted handle, the foaming shave gel, and travel cover, all for just $3. Plus, you get free shipping. But don't forget to use my code Sean S, SEANS, at checkout and give Harry's sharper blades a try. All right, a couple things as we go through some of these texts as well. On the blues side here, on that documentary that you can check out online, and like I said, I put that link up. Pretty interesting. So Alabama, you know, I kind of think we already have some strong flex when it comes to the music scene nationally, and this just adds more strength to it. So check that out, and then yeah, we'll You need to go watch the big Jim Folsom documentary, and then we could all call in Jeff Poor's show tomorrow and talk about it with him. He'll like that. All right, now back to what we started off last hour with, a lot of text about the Giuliani presser. Here's what, like I said, pragmatically, I don't think this changes what happens in January. I still think Joe Biden is president of the United States, but the allegation of 680 some odd thousand votes that should have been DQ'd, in the opinion of Rudy Giuliani, that's a big discussion point. We're not talking about, so many times you hear the discussion of fraud at the edges or the margins, right? Or whether or not fraud or negligence at the margins. It's this precinct that they couldn't get their act together. It's that other. It's part of the vote in this state. It's this. But some of these allegations here, if they're true, you got to wonder. You don't have to wonder why people have doubt, and a lot of doubt when it comes to, you know, you go in, you place your vote, and then what happens? I don't know how. I would hope with the big thinkers, y'all, air quotes here, in Washington and technology we have, maybe it's time for another system. But who's going to agree? I mean, we can't get people to agree if the sun rises in the east. Watch it, Dalton. Somebody on the text line will tell me that's fake news, and I'm just, the Trilateral Commission told me to say that sun rises in the east. We can't even agree, you know, our debates anymore have not been based in debating the facts. It's character assassination. So if that's the world we live in now, how are we going to tackle something that is widespread as the voting system and having people agree on it? I mean, you say, well, we'll vote the people in. That's the way a republic works, right? We'll vote the people in that agree with that. That's not going to happen across the country, and people are going to have want different results of these things. So what do you do? I mean, do you have, maybe that's an online opinion poll question for tomorrow or something would pop up. Do you have faith in the elections, federal elections? Okay, and if you say no, Sean, I don't, then why specifically? And then what would you change? What could change in that to give you confidence? It's one thing just to say, I mean, I think there's some people who are going to make a living and be happy with this idea of illegality, fraud, negligence in voting system. But I would say, okay, if that's the problem, then let's fix it. Well, how do you fix it? What do you do? What would we all, the people, agree on would be the better system? And I'm not talking about popular vote, electoral college. I mean, I argue every time it's the United States of America, not the United Citizens of America. There's a reason they point out the states. I'm a fan of what the Electoral College does. I would defend that. But within that system we have now, the mechanics of it, what would you change? We can sit here and point and say, well, that's unbelievable. That's fraudulent. Well, what do we change? I think that's a thing for us to think about and tackle going forward, or at least call for it. Now, will our representatives get it done? Imagine my cynicism on that. All right, now before we wrap up, I want to make sure that y'all are getting your names in the registration for the FM Talk 106.5 Naughty or Nice Christmas Contest. Prize package on this one, $6,600. Okay, nice. And what are y'all is going to win this? So here's how you enter this contest. Visit each participating sponsor, and I'll list them in a second, and drop your name and phone number in the entry box. We got little forms there. You put your name, phone number, drop it in, bing, like that, fast. You get one entry per person per store, and Dalton and I are checking on this, so don't try to ballot stuff here. No malfeasance. You can also enter by visiting each of our participating sponsors' Facebook page and commenting under the Naughty or Nice promotion post that's pinned on their business page. Now, where do you go? Well, first of all, Beckham's Florist and Gifts, Good Morning Mattress, which, by the way, I will be doing this show tomorrow live on location at Good Morning Mattress Airport in Hillcrest. Hopefully you can come by and say hello. We'll be there from noon to 2. That's tomorrow at Good Morning Mattress. Also, G&D Farm, Feeding Outdoors. I spent 3 Saturdays a month, I think, probably there, seeing those folks. Also, Carrot Patch Jewelers, great folks there. Stop in. Also, at Robertsdale Power Equipment, say hello to the family there. I hadn't been to see them in a couple months, so I'm due a drop by. Also, Spring Hill Ace Hardware, I was there on Sunday. Weatherford's Fountain and Lawn. All these locations are listed on our website and through our Facebook page. But you stop by each location, enter your name in the registration box, then go on their Facebook page and make sure you like that that post, and now you're in. And then sit back and just feel lucky until December 18th when we're going to announce the winner live on this show, Midday Mobile. So once again, go see them at Beckham's Florist and Gifts, Good Morning Mattress, G&D Farm, Farms, Carrot Patch, Robertsdale Power Equipment, Spring Hill Ace Hardware, and Weatherford's Fountain and Lawn. Check it out and win $6,600 worth of prizes for our Naughty or Nice Christmas contest right here on FM Talk 106.5. All right, I'm going to step aside for a few here. Paul Feinbaum does his thing. Of course, he's got a little bit to talk about here. Dalton, Dalton's rooting against Auburn this weekend, so got that to talk about tomorrow as well. Starting trouble here.